This is a concerto for bassoon by composer John Williams, a work intended for concert hall listening and not to accompany cinematic images. We might be surprised to learn that John Williams has also written a concerto for flute, one for tuba, another for clarinet, as well as concertos for cello, trumpet, horn, viola, oboe, and two for violins, and those aren't his only concert pieces. Still, the list is dwarfed by all his film scores. The Wilkes University Civic Band will perform music by John Williams, The Raiders March, on a program titled Music of the Silver Screen. And music director and conductor Joel Graham would hope that Williams' two hats as a composer of classical music and as a film composer would be less separate. He hopes we enjoy the energy of the march, but also pay attention to the theme and its development and celebrate what composers like John Williams do in the world of film as the classical composers he considers them to be. In addition to directing the Wilkes University Civic Band, Dr. Graham also leads the Wilkes Jazz Ensemble, which will present its spring concert titled Jazz Band Time Machine this evening at 7:30 at the Dart Center on the Wilkes campus in Wilkes-Barre, with the Civic Band spring concert following tomorrow evening, this Wednesday, also at the Dart Center. Joel Graham paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about the performances, and we began with his own musical background.
I grew up in Maine, went to school. My first degree was at University of Southern Maine, so I got my degree in music education. I started my career there teaching high school, and then I decided to get my master's. Ended up going to the University of New Hampshire, which is where I ended up finding my now wife, which is fantastic. We shared a program there, which is really exciting. And I continued on to my doctorate and then started teaching college.
What was your instrument or what were your instruments?
Yeah, my main instrument is trumpet. That's what I did starting in fifth grade. I played in all the groups in my school. It was a fairly small school system, but we had a concert band and a jazz ensemble. And I played with the local college when I started to get into high school and beyond and things like that. So I was really interested in music, did things like trumpet ensemble, joined the community band in the area. So it was a lot of playing. Good time.
When you think about the concept of a concert band or a jazz band and the forces you have to work with, how do you approach programming? What are some of your priorities?
So typically I try to program by a theme. It often makes things very difficult for me in the planning process, unfortunately, but I think the outcome is really well worth it as we're going through. And of course, as being a director of a college program, I also have to think of the educational value for the students and what we're going to get out of the program. So typically, I'm looking at where are they in their performance level, what would be a good challenge for them. I don't want it to be too challenging because I don't want them to feel overwhelmed, but I also want them to feel engaged. So it's a balance of finding things that are interesting, challenging, but not too beyond, and also a program that the audience will want to hear and draw a crowd, hopefully.
Well, let's start with the jazz ensemble. Tell us about its makeup and what you were thinking.
Sure. So the jazz ensemble at Wilkes is a typical big band. So five saxophones, trombones, trumpets, and rhythm section. So a typical big band that you'd find in a lot of arrangements, things like that. I do have a program if you want to look at it.
We look down the list and we see, okay, our Benny Golson, okay, Milt Jackson, Beethoven, what are you up to?
So this program is titled Jazz Band Time Machine. It was a way to get a kind of survey of different jazz styles and different figures throughout the 20th century in particular. So we start off kind of looking at different eras from Glenn Miller, going on to people like Joe Henderson and Maynard Ferguson, jumping a bit to people like Wayne Bergeron and Gordon Goodwin, but also looking like Clifford Brown, Milt Jackson, and then you have the two outliers here, as you said, Beethoven and Stevie Wonder might be the two that people kind of raise an eyebrow to, right? So there was a trend in the 70s where you were looking at different settings of music. Everything was being set as a disco, you know, funk disco piece. We'll be right back. And a lot of people are familiar with a fifth of Beethoven, which was popular on the radio during that time in 1976 as well. This is a very similar arrangement of Beethoven's, the first movement of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, where it's very disco feel. And you have to remember, anytime you're looking at jazz, that jazz was popular music for decades and decades. It grew into what we know as rock and eventually pop today. And Superstition, which is the piece playing by Stevie Wonder, is another outgrowth of that funk kind of exciting motion and jazz feel with things like exciting instruments like the clavinet, which we'll have on that electric clavichord type of sound there.
What about the role of the arranger in the case? Because you mentioned the composers, but what about the arrangers throughout a program like this?
Whenever you're talking about a jazz program in particular, the arranger is almost always central. So you'll see on this program almost every piece on here. In fact, only one of them does not have an arranger. And Mark Taylor is the one composer on here that has a piece that is not an arrangement. He was a staff arranger for the Army Blues Jazz Ensemble. And so that was one of the pieces he wrote while he was working for the Army. He also has many, many pieces as a result published as an arranger. So arrangers are absolutely critical. And that's the Beethoven piece in particular is really interesting because a fifth of Beethoven is a different arranger than the arranger we have here, even though they're very similar sounding. And so you often hear, especially in the same decade, around the same years, arrangers borrowing different styles from each other. And it's really kind of interesting to see what the common language was of the time, which is what this program is all about. You know, what were people listening to? What was interesting at the time? And give the students a chance to really experience some of those styles.
For example, this group, what are they particularly keen on for this program?
I've had a few students, and because it's students and community members, there's been a variety of favorites. And I find that happens a lot with programming. So I know some really love the Superstition arrangement that we're doing. It's exciting. It's fun. Beethoven's Fifth is also really different. So that's got a lot of people excited. Then I have others that the ballad, I Remember Clifford, the tribute to Clifford Brown, is just a beautiful, you know, lyrical ballad tribute to the trumpet player Clifford Brown from the 50s. And that's been named as a favorite by a few of them as well. So it's really kind of all over the place.
Well, please tell us where and when we can time travel with you.
So the concert for their jazz program this semester is Tuesday, April 30th at 7:30 p.m. right on the Wilkes University campus at the Dorothy Dixon Dart Center for the Performing Arts. You can find parking across the street. It is free and open to the public. So you can just come by a little bit before 7:30, grab a seat and sit for a great program.
And you're also director of the Civic Band.
I am. And we have a program coming for that the next night. So it's a little bit of a back-to-back week.
Tell us what makes up this band.
So the Civic Band is a symphonic band ensemble. It's a wind symphony model, meaning that it has all of the band instruments you would expect, you know, flutes, oboes, bassoons, clarinets, trumpets, saxophones, trombones, all the brass percussion, typical what you'd see in a concert band setting. This particular ensemble is open not only to Wilkes University students, but to community members. We have a nice mix of both, and that allows us to really program some interesting works and have a good experience for everybody across the board. It meets once a week so that it accommodates a lot of people's different schedules and really busy schedules. It's a really fantastic ensemble to work with.
And you talked about doing thematic programs, and this is a great one.
Yeah, this particular program is a fun one. As a teacher, I'm a big proponent of film music being the new classical music. And so like when I teach 101 classes or general education classes to college students, I really try to help them see that classical music isn't just the music of Beethoven and Bach and Mozart. It still lives on today rather prominently in terms of film. I mean, the same mechanics are being used day to day, especially Wagnerian ideas and things like that. And so when I look at a program like this, which is Music of the Silver Screen, I really focus on how is the classical music aspect of it, the so-called classical, you know, in quotes, how does it fit in to what I believe about film music? And so this program isn't just a mishmash of different film scores. It's a look at how film music has been adopted over the whole course of film history, everything from a newly composed works for movies that we know and a blockbuster, you know, going to the theater, to things like the silent film era and adoption of existing classical, so-called classical music for things like cartoons and things like that. And it makes it a really diverse and interesting program, I think.
You could conceive of a film music program like that, but you couldn't do it without John Williams, could you?
No, it would be impossible to do a film concert and not include John Williams. I think if anybody on the street is going to be able to name a film composer, it is going to be John Williams.
And what did you choose?
For this particular concert, I went back and forth. I mean, besides John Williams' collaborations with Spielberg, his probably best-known collaboration is with George Lucas. And so, obviously, the things that come to mind immediately are things like the Star Wars theme, but I ended up choosing Raiders March, which is the theme from Indiana Jones and the Ark of the Covenant.
And what a way to grab us.
Yeah. In addition to being a march, it's such an interesting theme. I mean, I've heard him talk about this theme in person, and it just to hear him talk about his process and how he comes up with these different, very kind of key characteristic sounds for these characters is just absolutely phenomenal. And this is one of those examples where you hear this very well-known character, and it's a very recognizable theme.
How is The Poet and Peasant connected to film?
So Suppé's Poet and Peasant has had quite an interesting life. It started life as incidental music in the 1840s when Suppé was alive, and that's what he wrote it for a play. In 1900, it was then revisited and turned into an operetta. And then in the early years of film, particularly cartoons, practically every studio was borrowing classical music or different music that already existed for these cartoons. And so you hear this on the silver screen in a couple cartoons early in the 20th century featuring some characters that people are really familiar with. Mickey Mouse was conducting it in the short The Barnyard Concert, and Popeye the Sailor Man was conducting it in the Spinach Overture. So it kind of just shows up in the most random places, but shows you how music can just find its way into film anytime.
Do we know Robert Brown Hall?
That is an interesting question. So this one is one of the more interesting choices on this program. Whenever I program a theme to, I love to have the students and the ensemble members guess the theme by the music. And there's always something in the program that is a bit of a wrench for their guess. And this was the one that nobody could make the connection to. Robert Brown Hall is a march composer, a contemporary of John Philip Sousa. He's known as the New England March King. He was a native of Maine, which is my native state as well, which is one of the reasons I'm very familiar with him. Unfortunately, Sousa had a very long life and very successful life. He lived in D.C. Robert Brown Hall lived in Maine with a much smaller population, and he had a much shorter life. So even though he wrote quite a bit of music that is excellent quality, he did not have the same kind of breadth of programming and writing that we saw with people like Sousa. So this particular march found its way into a film in the 90s. So this is another example of composers finding their way into modern film and modern shows and things like that. And this movie, not many people will recognize it. The title of the movie is Brassed Off, which was a film in the early 90s about a coal mining town in England.
Believe it or not, we have the soundtrack.
It has an excellent soundtrack, and this is on it. It's also known as Death or Glory, which is what I think it is titled on that soundtrack. Arby Hall actually found quite a bit of fan base in the UK. Even though he wasn't as popular as Sousa in the United States, a lot of his music found its way across the pond, and that's a good example.
Talk about music education.
The Highlights of the Music Man is one of the examples on this program. As we're looking at how music found its way into film, I couldn't possibly do a program without including a musical, something that started out on Broadway that found its way into film. And The Music Man famously has two excellent adaptations, 1962 and 2003, of The Music Man. The latter, starring Matthew Broderick, is probably the one that a lot of people would know today.
The theme of music education must speak to you on some level, yes, and how important it is for young people to have instruments.
Absolutely. In the case of the plot of The Music Man, probably not going about it that way, but absolutely music education is important. And I think instrumental music education vital to a lot of students' success when they look at music.
Now, we just love that image of the moon. Is there anything better than that graphic? Tell us about that.
So the kind of capstone of this concert is we're actually showing the 1902 film Voyage to the Moon, Georges Méliès' famous short silent film. And this kind of encapsulates this whole program of the silver screen. When you look at early film, really early film, and this was revolutionary at the time, the way that music was used was completely inconsistent. So you would have there was no composer writing scores for these films. You had theater orchestras. So people working at the theaters where they would show the film actually create scores and patches of music or semblances of different themes and play it with the film. So in this case, we have the film being shown in the theater with us, with live accompaniment, with the ensemble, with a brand new score. It's only been performed once, as far as I know, by up-and-coming composer Brian Whittier. Historically, I mean, an ensemble for a silent film wouldn't be nearly as large as the ensemble that we have, but it does give you that idea of what it would have been like to sit in one of these old Nickelodeons or movie palaces and have a theater orchestra playing this live music with the film. It's really quite the experience.
And then you decided to bring it to a close with music from a film that people know, and many people know the name Hans Zimmer, don't they?
I think so. There was something kind of poetic about framing this concert with John Williams and Hans Zimmer. Hans Zimmer being a little, you know, younger than John Williams, but they've had very similar career paths and success. One of Hans Zimmer's most famous scores are for his work on the Pirates of the Caribbean film franchise. So this is a medley from the third movie, which I think has the best score altogether, At World's End. And it just was a nice way to frame the whole kind of silver screen concert, bring in a modern film that many people will be able to recognize the music to because they've probably seen the film, it being just from 2007. It's not as old as some of the other examples on this, so maybe a little bit more relevant to young people in particular.
We spoke with Dr. Joel Graham, Assistant Professor of Music Bands at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre, and we talked about the spring concerts of his ensembles. It's the jazz band first, the Wilkes University Jazz Ensemble, with a program titled Jazz Band Time Machine. And that's this evening, Tuesday, April 30th, at the Dorothy Dixon Dart Center for the Performing Arts on the Wilkes campus. And for more information, it's wilkes.edu, wilkes.edu. Admission is free. And then tomorrow evening, same time, same place, 7:30 p.m. at the Dart Center on the Wilkes campus. And that's the Civic Band presenting music of the Silver Screen, 7:30. And it's the film Le Voyage dans la Lune, the Voyage to the Moon, with new music by Brian Whittier, perhaps the second time that music has been heard. So you can enjoy not just the music, but then that experience of live music and a silent film. It's the Wilkes University Civic Band tomorrow evening at 7:30 at the Dart Center, and Dr. Graham will lead each of those performances. For more information on the web, wilkes.edu, wilkes.edu.